Listening Library presents Eleanor and Park by Rainbow Rowell, read for you by Rebecca Lohman and Sunil Malhotra.
He'd stopped trying to bring her back. She only came back when she felt like it, in dreams and lies and broken down deja vu. Like, he'd be driving to work and he'd see a girl with red hair standing on the corner, and he'd swear, for half a choking moment, that it was her. Then he'd see that the girl's hair was more blonde than red, and that she was holding a cigarette and wearing a Sex Pistols t-shirt. Eleanor hated the Sex Pistols. Eleanor. Standing behind him until he turned his head, lying next to him just before he woke up, making everyone else seem drabber and flatter and never good enough. Eleanor ruining everything. Eleanor, gone. He'd stopped trying to bring her back.
August, 1986.
Chapter 1. Park. XTC was no good for drowning out the morons at the back of the bus. Park pressed his headphones into his ears. Tomorrow, he was going to bring Skinny Puppy or the Misfits. Or maybe he'd make a special bus tape with as much screaming and wailing on it as possible. He could get back to New Wave in November, after he got his driver's license. His parents had already said Park could have his mom's Impala, and he'd been saving up for a new tape deck. Once he started driving to school, he could listen to whatever he wanted or nothing at all, and he'd get to sleep in an extra 20 minutes. "That doesn't exist," somebody shouted behind him. "It so fucking does," Steve shouted back. "Drunken monkey style, man. It's a real fucking thing. You can kill somebody with it." "You're full of shit. You're full of shit," Steve said. "Park! Hey, Park!" Park heard him, but didn't answer. Sometimes, if you ignored Steve for a minute, he moved on to someone else. Knowing that was 80% of surviving with Steve as your neighbor. The other 20% was just keeping your head down. Which Park had momentarily forgotten. A ball of paper hit him in the back of the head. "Those were my human growth and development notes, Dicklick," Tina said. "I'm sorry, baby," Steve said. "I'll teach you all about human growth and development. What do you need to know?" "Teacher drunken monkey style," somebody said. "Park!" Steve shouted. Park pulled down his headphones and turned to the back of the bus. Steve was holding court in the last seat. Even sitting, his head practically touched the roof. Steve always looked like he was surrounded by doll furniture. He'd looked like a grown man since the 7th grade, and that was before he grew a full beard. Slightly before. Sometimes, Park wondered if Steve was with Tina because she made him look even more like a monster. Most of the girls from the flats were small, but Tina couldn't be 5 feet, massive hair included. Once, back in middle school, some guy had tried to give Steve shit about how he better not get Tina pregnant, because if he did, his giant babies would kill her. "They'll bust out of her stomach like an alien's," the guy said. Steve broke his little finger on the guy's face. When Park's dad heard, he said, "Somebody needs to teach that Murphy kid how to make a fist." But Park hoped nobody would. The guy who Steve hit couldn't open his eyes for a week. Park tossed Tina her balled-up homework. She caught it. "Park," Steve said. "Tell Mikey about drunken monkey karate." "I don't know anything about it," Park shrugged. "But it exists, right?" "I guess I've heard of it." "There," Steve said. He looked for something to throw at Mikey, but couldn't find anything. He pointed instead. "I fucking told you." "What the fuck does Sheridan know about kung fu?" Mikey said. "Are you retarded?" Steve said. "His mom's Chinese." Mikey looked at Park carefully. Park smiled and narrowed his eyes. "Yeah, I guess I see it," Mikey said. "I always thought you were Mexican." "Shit, Mikey," Steve said. "You're such a fucking racist."
"She's not Chinese," Tina said. "She's Korean."
"Who is?" Steve asked. "Park's mom?" Park's mom had been cutting Tina's hair since grade school. They both had the exact same hairstyle, long spiral perms with tall feathered bangs.
She's fucking hot is what she is, Steve said, cracking himself up. No offense, Park.
Park managed another smile and slunk back into his seat, putting his headphones back on and cranking up the volume. He could still hear Steve and Mikey, four seats behind him.
But what's the fucking point? Mikey asked.
Dude, what do you want to fight a drunk monkey? They're fucking huge, like every which way but loose, man. Imagine that bastard losing his shit on you.
Park noticed a new girl at about the same time everybody else did. She was standing at the front of the bus, next to the first available seat. There was a kid sitting there by himself, a freshman. He put his bag down on the seat beside him, then looked the other way. All down the aisle, anybody who was sitting alone moved to the edge of their seats. Park heard Tina snicker. She lived for this stuff. The new girl took a deep breath and stepped farther down the aisle. Nobody would look at her. Park tried not to, but it was kind of a train wreck, eclipse situation. The girl just looked like exactly the sort of person this would happen to. Not just new, but big and awkward, with crazy hair, bright red on top of curly. And she was dressed like she wanted people to look at her. Or maybe like she didn't get what a mess she was. She had on a plaid shirt, a man's shirt, with half a dozen weird necklaces hanging around her neck and scarves wrapped around her wrists. She reminded Park of a scarecrow or one of the trouble dolls his mom kept on her dresser. Like something that wouldn't survive in the wild. The bus stopped again, and a bunch more kids got on. They pushed past the girl, knocking into her, and dropped into their own seats. That was the thing. Everybody on the bus already had a seat. They'd all claimed one on the first day of school. People like Park, who were lucky enough to have a whole seat to themselves, weren't going to give that up now. Especially not for someone like this. Park looked back up at the girl. She was just standing there.
Hey, you! The bus driver yelled. Sit down!
The girl started moving toward the back of the bus, right into the belly of the beast.
God, Park thought. Stop. Turn around.
He could feel Steve and Mikey licking their chops as she got closer. He tried again to look away. Then the girl spotted an empty seat just across from Park. Her face lit with relief, and she hurried toward it.
Hey,
Tina said sharply. The girl kept moving.
Hey, Tina said. Bozo.
Steve started laughing. His friends fell in a few seconds behind him.
You can't sit there, Tina said. That's Michaela's seat.
The girl stopped and looked up at Tina, then looked back at the empty seat.
Sit down, the driver bellowed from the front.
I have to sit somewhere,
the girl said to Tina in a firm, calm voice.
Not my problem, Tina snapped.
The bus lurched, and the girl rocked back to keep from falling. Park tried to turn the volume up on his Walkman, but it was already all the way up. He looked back at the girl. It looked like she was starting to cry. Before he'd even decided to do it, Park scooted toward the window.
Sit down, he said.
It came out angrily. The girl turned to him like she couldn't tell whether he was another jerk or what.
Jesus fuck,
Park said softly, nodding to the space next to him.
Just sit down.
The girl sat down. She didn't say anything, thank God she didn't thank him, and she left 6 inches of space on the seat between them. Park turned toward the plexiglass window and waited for a world of suck to hit the fan.
Chapter 2. Eleanor. Eleanor considered her options. One, she could walk home from school. Pros, exercise, color in her cheeks, time to herself. Cons, she didn't know her new address yet, or even the general direction to start walking. Two, she could call her mom and ask for a ride. Pros, lots. Cons, her mom didn't have a phone or a car. Three, she could call her dad. Ha. Four, she could call her grandma, just to say hi. She was sitting on the concrete steps at the front of the school, staring out at the row of yellow buses. Her bus was right there, number 666. Even if Eleanor could avoid the bus today, even if her fairy godmother showed up with a pumpkin carriage, she'd still have to find a way to get back to school tomorrow morning. And it's not like the devil kids on the bus were going to wake up on the other side of their beds tomorrow. Seriously, it wouldn't surprise Eleanor if they unhinged their jaws the next time she saw them. That girl in the back with the blonde hair and the acid-washed jacket, you could practically see the horns hidden in her bangs. And her boyfriend was possibly a member of the Nephilim. That girl, all of them, hated Eleanor before they'd even laid eyes on her, like they'd been hired to kill her in a past life. Eleanor couldn't tell if the Asian kid who finally let her sit down was one of them, or whether he was just really stupid. But not stupid. He was in two of Eleanor's honors classes. Her mom had insisted that the new school put Eleanor in honors classes. She'd freaked when she saw how bad Eleanor's grades were from last year in the ninth grade. "This can't be a surprise to you, Mrs. Douglas," the counselor said. "Ha," Eleanor thought. "You'd be surprised what could be a surprise at this point." Whatever. Eleanor could stare at the clouds just as easily in honors classes. There were just as many windows. If she ever even came back to this school. If she ever even got home. Eleanor couldn't tell her mom about the bus situation anyway, because her mom had already said that Eleanor didn't have to ride the bus. Last night, when she was helping Eleanor unpack, "Richie said he'll take you," her mom said. "It's on his way to work." "Is he going to make me ride in the back of his truck?" "He's trying to make peace, Eleanor. You promised that you'd try too." "It's easier for me to make peace from a distance." "I told him you were ready to be part of this family." "I'm already part of this family. I'm like a charter member." "Eleanor," her mom said, "please." "I'll just ride the bus," Eleanor had said. "It's not a big deal. I'll meet people." "Ha," Eleanor thought now. Giant, dramatic ha. Her bus was going to leave soon. A few of the other buses were already pulling away. Somebody ran down the steps next to Eleanor and accidentally kicked her bag. She pulled it out of the way and started to say sorry, but it was that stupid Asian kid, and he frowned when he saw that it was her. She frowned right back at him, and he ran ahead. "Oh, fine," Eleanor thought. "The children of hell shan't go hungry on my watch."
Chapter 3. Park.
She didn't talk to him on the ride home. Park had spent all day trying to think of how to get away from the new girl. He'd have to switch seats. That was the only answer. But switch to what seat? He didn't want to force himself on somebody else, and even the act of switching seats would catch Steve's attention. Park had expected Steve to start in on him as soon as he let the girl sit down, but Steve went right back to talking about Kung Fu again. Park, by the way, knew plenty about Kung Fu, because his dad was obsessed with martial arts, not because his mom was Korean. Park and his little brother Josh had been taking Taekwondo since they could walk. Switch seats? How? He could probably find a seat up front with the freshmen, but that would be a spectacular show of weakness, and he almost hated to think about leaving the weird new girl at the back of the bus by herself. He hated himself for thinking like this. If his dad knew he was thinking like this, he'd call Park a pussy. Out loud, for once. If his grandma knew, she'd smack him on the back of the head. "Where are your manners?" she'd say. "Is that any way to treat somebody who's down on her luck?" But Park didn't have any luck or status to spare on that dumb redhead. He had just enough to keep himself out of trouble. And he knew it was crappy, but he was kind of grateful that people like that girl existed. Because people like Steve and Mikey and Tina existed too, and they needed to be fed. If it wasn't that redhead, it was going to be somebody else. And if it wasn't somebody else, it was going to be Park. Steve had let it go this morning, but he wouldn't keep letting it go. Park could hear his grandma again. "Seriously, son? You're giving yourself a stomach ache because you did something nice while other people were watching?" It wasn't even that nice, Park thought.
He'd let the girl sit down, but he'd sworn at her. When she showed up in his English class that afternoon, it felt like she was there to haunt him.
Eleanor, Mr. Stessman said. What a powerful name. It's a queen's name, you know.
It's the name of the fat chipette, somebody behind Park whispered. Somebody else laughed. Mr. Stessman gestured to an empty desk up front.
We're reading poetry today, Eleanor, he said. Dickinson, perhaps you'd like to get us started?
He opened her book to the right page and pointed.
Go ahead, he said. Clear and loud. I'll tell you when to stop.
The new girl looked at Mr. Stessman like she hoped he was kidding. When it was clear that he wasn't, he almost never was, she started to read.
I had been hungry all the years, she read.
A few kids laughed.
Jesus, Park thought. Only Mr. Stessman would make a chubby girl read a poem about eating on her first day of class.
Carry on, Eleanor, Mr. Stessman said. She started over, which Park thought was a terrible idea.
I had been hungry all the years, she said, louder this time. My noon had come to dine. I, trembling, drew the table near and touched the curious wine. 'Twas this on tables I had seen when turning, hungry, lone, I looked in windows for the wealth I could not hope to own.
Mr. Stessman didn't stop her, so she read the whole poem in that cool, defiant voice, the same voice she'd used on Tina.
That was wonderful, Mr. Stessman said when she was done. He was beaming. Just wonderful. I hope you'll stay with us, Eleanor, at least until we do Medea. That's a voice that arrives on a chariot drawn by dragons.
When the girl showed up in history, Mr. Sanderhoff didn't make a scene, but he did say,
Ah, Queen Eleanor of Aquitaine, when she handed him her paperwork.
She sat down a few rows ahead of Park and, as far as he could tell, spent the whole period staring at the sun. Park couldn't think of a way to get rid of her on the bus, or a way to get rid of himself, so he put his headphones on before the girl sat down and turned the volume all the way up. Thank God she didn't try to talk to him.
Chapter 4. Eleanor. She got home that afternoon before all the little kids, which was good because she wasn't ready to see them again. It had been such a freak show when she walked in last night. Eleanor had spent so much time thinking about what it would be like to finally come home and how much she missed everybody. She thought they'd throw her a ticker tape parade. She thought it would be a big hug fest. But when Eleanor walked in the house, it was like her siblings didn't recognize her. Ben just glanced at her, and Maisie was sitting on Richie's lap, which would have made Eleanor throw right up if she hadn't just promised her mom that she'd be on her best behavior for the rest of her life. Only Mouse ran to hug Eleanor. She picked him up gratefully. He was 5 now, and heavy. Hey, Mouse, she said. They'd called him that since he was a baby. She couldn't remember why. He reminded her more of a big, sloppy puppy, always excited, always trying to jump into your lap.
Look, Dad, it's Eleanor, Mouse said, jumping down. Do you know Eleanor?
Richie pretended not to hear. Maisie watched and sucked her thumb. Eleanor hadn't seen her do that in years. She was 8 now, but with her thumb in her mouth, she looked just like a baby. The baby wouldn't remember Eleanor at all. He'd be 2. There he was, sitting on the floor with Ben. Ben was 11. He stared at the wall behind the TV. Their mom carried the duffel bag with Eleanor's stuff into a bedroom off the living room, and Eleanor followed her. The room was tiny, just big enough for a dresser and some bunk beds. Mouse ran into the room after them.
You get the top bunk, he said, and Ben has to sleep on the floor with me. Mom already told us, and Ben started to cry.
Don't worry about that, their mom said softly. We all just have to readjust. There wasn't room in this room to readjust. which Eleanor decided not to mention. She went to bed as soon as she could, so she wouldn't have to go back out to the living room. When she woke up in the middle of the night, all three of her brothers were asleep on the floor. There was no way to get up without stepping on one of them, and she didn't even know where the bathroom was. She found it. There were only 5 rooms in the house, and the bathroom just barely counted. It was attached to the kitchen, like literally attached, without a door. This house was designed by cave trolls, Eleanor thought. Somebody, probably her mom, had hung a flowered sheet between the refrigerator and the toilet. When she got home from school, Eleanor let herself in with her new key. The house was possibly even more depressing in daylight, dingy and bare. But at least Eleanor had the place and her mom to herself. It was weird to come home and see her mom just standing in the kitchen, like normal. She was making soup, chopping onions. Eleanor felt like crying. "How was school?" her mom asked. "Fine," Eleanor said. "Did you have a good first day?" "Sure. I mean, yeah, it was just school." "Will you have a lot of catching up to do?" "I don't think so." Her mom wiped her hands on the back of her jeans and tucked her hair behind her ears, and Eleanor was struck, for the 10,000th time, by how beautiful she was. When Eleanor was a little girl, she'd thought her mom looked like a queen, like the star of some fairy tale. Not a princess. Princesses are just pretty. Eleanor's mother was beautiful. She was tall and stately, with broad shoulders and an elegant waist. All her bones seemed more purposeful than other people's, like they weren't just there to hold her up. They were there to make a point. She had a strong nose and a sharp chin, and her cheekbones were high and thick. You'd look at Eleanor's mom and think she must be carved into the prow of a Viking ship somewhere, or maybe painted on the side of a plane. Eleanor looked a lot like her, but not enough. Eleanor looked like her mother through a fish tank, rounder and softer, slurred. Where her mother was statuesque, Eleanor was heavy. Where her mother was finely drawn, Eleanor was smudged. After 5 kids, her mother had breasts and hips like a woman in a cigarette ad. At 16, Eleanor was already built like she ran a medieval pub. She had too much of everything and too little height to hide it. Her breasts started just below her chin. Her hips were a parody. Even her mom's hair, long and wavy and auburn, was a more legitimate version of Eleanor's bright red curls. Eleanor put her hand to her head self-consciously. "I have something to show you," her mom said, covering the soup, "but I didn't want to do it in front of the little kids. Here, come on." Eleanor followed her into the kids' bedroom. Her mom opened the closet and took out a stack of towels and a laundry basket full of socks. "I couldn't bring all your things when we moved," she said. "Obviously, we don't have as much room here as we had in the old house." She reached into the closet and pulled out a black plastic garbage bag. "But I packed as much as I could." She handed Eleanor the bag and said, "I'm sorry about the rest." Eleanor had assumed that Richie threw all her stuff in the trash a year ago, 10 seconds after he'd kicked her out. She took the bag in her arms. "It's okay," she said. "Thanks." Her mom reached out and touched Eleanor's shoulder just for a second. "The little kids will be home in 20 minutes or so," she said, "and we'll eat dinner around 4:30. I like to have everything settled before Richie comes home." Eleanor nodded. She opened the bag as soon as her mom left the room. She wanted to see what was still hers. The first thing she recognized were the paper dolls. They were loose in the bag and wrinkled. A few were marked with crayons. It had been years since Eleanor had played with them, but she was still happy to see them there. She pressed them flat and laid them in a pile. Under the dolls were books, a dozen or so, that her mother must have grabbed at random. She wouldn't have known which were Eleanor's favorites. Eleanor was glad to see Garp and Watership Down. It sucked that Oliver's story had made the cut, but Love's story hadn't. And Little Men was there, but not Little Women or Joe's Boys. There were a bunch more papers in the bag. Eleanor had a file cabinet in her old room, and it looked like her mom had grabbed most of the folders. Eleanor tried to get everything into a neat stack, all the report cards and school pictures and letters from pen pals. She wondered where the rest of the stuff from the old house had ended up. Not just her stuff, but everybody's. Like the furniture and the toys, and all of her mom's plants and paintings, her grandma's Danish wedding plates, the little red Ufta horse that always used to hang above the sink. Maybe it was packed away somewhere. Maybe her mom was hoping the cave troll house was just temporary. Eleanor was still hoping that Richie was just temporary. At the bottom of the black trash bag was a box. Her heart jumped a little when she saw it. Her uncle in Minnesota used to send her family a Fruit of the Month Club membership every Christmas, and Eleanor and her brothers and sister would always fight over the boxes that the fruit came in. It was stupid, but they were good boxes, solid with nice lids. This one was a grapefruit box, soft from wear at the edges. Eleanor opened it carefully. Nothing inside had been touched. There was her stationery, her colored pencils, and her Prismacolor markers, another Christmas present from her uncle. There was a stack of promotional cards from the mall that still smelled like expensive perfumes. And there was her Walkman, untouched, unbatteried too, but nevertheless there. And where there was a Walkman, there was the possibility of music. Eleanor let her head fall over the box. It smelled like Chanel No. 5 and pencil shavings. She sighed. There wasn't anything to do with her recovered belongings once she'd sorted through them. There wasn't even room in the dresser for Eleanor's clothes. So she set aside the box and the books and carefully put everything else back in the garbage bag. Then she pushed the bag back as far as she could on the highest shelf in the closet, behind the towels and a humidifier. She climbed onto her bunk and found a scraggly old cat napping there. "Shoo," Eleanor said, shoving him. The cat leapt to the floor and out the bedroom door.
Chapter 5. Park.
Mr. Stessman was making them all memorize a poem, whatever poem they wanted. Well, whatever poem they picked.
"You're going to forget everything else I teach you," Mr. Stessman said, petting his mustache. "Everything. Maybe you'll remember that Beowulf fought a monster. Maybe you'll remember that to be or not to be is Hamlet, not Macbeth. But everything else? Forget about it."
He was slowly walking up and down each aisle. Mr. Stessman loved this kind of stuff, theater in the round. He stopped next to Park's desk and leaned in casually with his hand on the back of Park's chair. Park stopped drawing and sat up straight. He couldn't draw anyway.
"So, you're going to memorize a poem," Mr. Stessman continued, pausing a moment to smile down at Park like Gene Wilder in the Chocolate Factory. "Brains love poetry. It's sticky stuff. You're going to memorize this poem, and 5 years from now, we're going to see each other at the village inn, and you'll say, 'Mr. Stessman, I still remember the road not taken. Listen, two roads diverged in a yellow wood.'"
He moved on to the next desk. Park relaxed.
"Nobody gets to pick 'The Road Not Taken,' by the way. I'm sick to death of it, and no Shel Silverstein. He's grand, but you've graduated. We're all adults here. Choose an adult poem. Choose a romantic poem. That's my advice. You'll get the most use out of it."
He walked by the new girl's desk, but she didn't turn away from the window.
"Of course, it's up to you. You may choose A Dream Deferred. Eleanor?"
She turned blankly. Mr. Stessman leaned in.
"You may choose it, Eleanor. It's poignant, and it's truth. But how often will you get to roll that one out?" "No. Choose a poem that speaks to you. Choose a poem that will help you speak to someone else."
Park planned to choose a poem that rhymed so it'd be easier to memorize.
He liked Mr. Stessman, he really did, but he wished he'd dial it back a few notches. Whenever he worked the room like this, Park got embarrassed for him.
"We meet tomorrow in the library," Mr. Stessman said, back at his desk. "Tomorrow, we're gathering rosebuds."
The bell rang, on cue.
Chapter 6. Eleanor. "Watch it, raghead." Tina pushed roughly past Eleanor and climbed onto the bus. She had everybody else in their gym class calling Eleanor bozo, but Tina had already moved on to raghead and Bloody Mary. "'Cause it looks like your whole head is on the rag," she'd explained today in the locker room. It made sense that Tina was in Eleanor's gym class, because gym was an extension of hell, and Tina was definitely a demon. A weird miniature demon, like a toy demon or a teacup. And she had a whole gang of lesser demons, all dressed in matching gym suits. Actually, everyone wore matching gym suits. At Eleanor's old school, she'd thought it had sucked that they had to wear gym shorts. Eleanor hated her legs even more than she hated the rest of her body. But at North, they had to wear gym suits. Polyester onesies. The bottom was red, and the top was red and white striped, and it all zipped up the front. "Red isn't your color, bozo," Tina had said the first time Eleanor suited up. The other girls all laughed, even the black girls who hated Tina. Laughing at Eleanor was Dr. King's mountain. After Tina pushed past her, Eleanor took her time getting on the bus. But she still got to her seat before that stupid Asian kid, which meant she'd have to get up to let him have his spot by the window, which would be awkward. It was all awkward. Every time the bus hit a pothole, Eleanor practically fell in the guy's lap. Maybe somebody else on the bus would drop out or die or something and she'd be able to move away from him. At least he didn't ever talk to her or look at her. At least she didn't think he did. Eleanor never looked at him. Sometimes she looked at his shoes. He had cool shoes. And sometimes she looked to see what he was reading. Always comic books. Eleanor never brought anything to read on the bus. She didn't want Tina or anybody else to catch her with her head down.
Park.
It felt wrong to sit next to somebody every day and not talk to her, even if she was weird. Jesus, was she weird. Today, she was dressed like a Christmas tree, with all this stuff pinned to her clothes, shapes cut out of fabric, ribbon. The ride home couldn't go fast enough. Park couldn't wait to get away from her, away from everybody.
Dude, where's your dobok?
He was trying to eat dinner alone in his room, but his little brother wouldn't let him. Josh stood in the doorway, already dressed for Taekwondo and inhaling a chicken leg.
"Dad's going to be here, like, now," Josh said through the drumstick. "And he's gonna shit if you're not ready."
Their mom came up behind Josh and thumped him on the head.
"Don't cuss, dirty mouth."
She had to reach up to do it. Josh was his father's son. He was already at least 7 inches taller than their mom and 3 inches taller than Park. Which sucked. Park pushed Josh out the door and slammed it. So far, Park's strategy for maintaining his status as older brother, despite their growing size differential, was to pretend he could still kick Josh's ass. He could still beat him at Taekwondo, but only because Josh got impatient with any sport where his size wasn't an obvious advantage. The high school football coach had already started coming to Josh's peewee games. Park changed into his dobok, wondering if he was going to have to start wearing Josh's hand-me-downs pretty soon. Maybe he could take a Sharpie to all Josh's Husker football t-shirts and make them say, "Husker do." Or maybe it wouldn't even be an issue. Park might never get any taller than 5'4". He might never grow out of the clothes he had now. He put on his Chuck Taylors and took his dinner into the kitchen, eating over the counter. His mom was trying to get gravy out of Josh's white jacket with a washcloth.
"Mindy?"
That's how Park's dad came home every night, like the dad in a sitcom. "Lucy?" And his mom would call out from wherever she was, "In here." Except she said it, "In here,"
because she was apparently never going to stop sounding like she just got here yesterday from Korea. Sometimes Park thought she kept the accent on purpose, because his dad liked it. But his mom tried so hard to fit in every other way. If she could sound like she grew up right around the corner, she would. His dad barreled into the kitchen and scooped his mom into his arms. They did this every night, too. Full-on make-out sessions, no matter who was around. It was like watching Paul Bunyan make out with one of those It's a Small World dolls. Park grabbed his brother's sleeve. Come on, let's go. They could wait in the Impala. Their dad would be out in a minute, as soon as he changed into his giant Dobok.
Eleanor. She still couldn't get used to eating dinner so early. When did this all start? In the old house, they'd all eaten together, even Richie. Eleanor wasn't complaining about not having to eat with Richie, but now it was like their mom wanted them all out of the way before he came home. She even made him a totally different dinner. The kids would get grilled cheese, and Richie would get steak. Eleanor wasn't complaining about the grilled cheese, either. It was a nice break from bean soup and beans and rice and huevos y frijoles. After dinner, Eleanor usually disappeared into her room to read, but the little kids always went outside. What were they going to do when it got cold and when it started getting dark early? Would they all hide in the bedroom? It was crazy. Diary of Anne Frank crazy. Eleanor climbed up onto her bunk bed and got out her stationery box. That dumb gray cat was sleeping in her bed again. She pushed him off. She opened the grapefruit box and flipped through her stationery. She kept meaning to write letters to her friends from her old school. She hadn't gotten to say goodbye to anybody when she left. Her mom had shown up out of the blue and pulled Eleanor out of class. "Oh, get your things, you're coming home." Her mom had been so happy. And Eleanor had been so happy. They went straight to North to get Eleanor registered, then stopped at Burger King on the way to the new house. Her mom kept squeezing Eleanor's hand. Eleanor had pretended not to notice the bruises on her mom's wrist. The bedroom door opened, and her little sister walked in, carrying the cat. "Mom wants you to leave the door open," Maisie said, "for the breeze." Every window in the house was open, but there didn't seem to be any breeze. With the door open, Eleanor could just see Richie sitting on the couch. She scooted down the bed until she couldn't. "What are you doing?" Maisie asked. "Writing a letter." "To who?" "I don't know yet." "Can I come up?" "No." For the moment, all Eleanor could think about was keeping her box safe. She didn't want Maisie to see the colored pencils and clean paper. Plus, part of her still wanted to punish Maisie for sitting in Richie's lap. That never would have happened before. Before Richie kicked Eleanor out, all the kids were allied against him. Maybe Eleanor had hated him the most and the most openly, but they were all on her side, Ben and Maisie, even Mouse. Mouse used to steal Richie's cigarettes and hide them, and Mouse was the one they'd sent to knock on their mom's door when they heard bed springs. When it was worse than bed springs, when it was shouting or crying, they'd huddle together, all five of them, on Eleanor's bed. They'd all had their own beds in the old house. Maisie sat at Eleanor's right hand then. When Mouse cried, when Ben's face went blank and dreamy, Maisie and Eleanor would lock eyes. "I hate him," Eleanor would say. "I hate him so much. I wish he was dead," Maisie would answer. "I hope he falls off a ladder at work. I hope he gets hit by a truck. A garbage truck." "Yeah," Maisie would say, gritting her teeth. "And all the garbage will fall on his dead body. And then a bus will run him over." "Yeah. I hope I'm on it." Maisie put the cat back on Eleanor's bed. "It likes to sleep up there," she said. "Do you call him Dad, too?" Eleanor asked. "He is our dad now," Maisie said. Eleanor woke up in the middle of the night. Richie had fallen asleep in the living room with the TV on. She didn't breathe on the way to the bathroom and was too scared to flush the toilet. When she got back to her room, she closed the door. Fuck the breeze.
Chapter 7. Park. I'm going to ask Kim out, Cal said.
Don't ask Kim out, Park said.
Why not?
They were sitting in the library, and they were supposed to be looking for poems. Cal had already picked out something short about a girl named Julia and the liquefaction of her clothes.
Crass, Park said.
It can't be crass, Cal argued. It's 300 years old.
Because she's Kim, Park said. You can't ask her out. Look at her.
Kim was sitting at the next table over with two other preppy girls.
Look at her, Cal said. She's a Betty.
Jesus,
Park said. You sound so stupid.
What? That's a thing. A Betty is a thing.
But you got it from Thrasher or something, right?
That's how people learn new words, Park.
Cal tapped a book of poetry.
Reading.
You're trying too hard.
She's a Betty,
Cal said, nodding at Kim and getting a Slim Jim out of his backpack. Park looked at Kim again. She had bobbed blonde hair and hard, curled bangs, and she was the only kid in school with a swatch. Kim was one of those people who never wrinkled. She wouldn't make eye contact with Cal. She'd be afraid he'd leave a stain.
This is my year, Cal said. I'm getting a girlfriend.
But probably not Kim.
Why not Kim? You think I need to aim lower?
Park looked up at him. Cal wasn't a bad-looking guy. He had kind of a tall Barney Rubble thing going on. He already had pieces of Slim Jim caught in his front teeth.
Aim elsewhere, Park said.
Screw that, Cal said. I'm starting at the top, and I'm getting you a girl, too.
Thanks, but no thanks, Park said.
Double dating, Cal said.
No.
In the Impala?
Don't get your hopes up. Park's dad had decided to be a fascist about Park's driver's license. He'd announced last night that Park had to learn to drive a stick first. Park opened another book of poetry. It was all about war. He closed it.
Now there's a girl who might want a piece of you, Cal said. Looks like somebody's got jungle fever.
That isn't even the right kind of racist, Park said, looking up. Cal was nodding toward the far corner of the library. The new girl was sitting there, staring right at them.
She's kind of big, Cal said, but the Impala is a spacious automobile.
She's not looking at me. She's just staring. She does that.
Watch.
Park waved at the girl, but she didn't blink. He'd made eye contact with her only once since her first day on the bus. It was last week in history, and she practically gouged out his eyes with hers.
If you don't want people to look at you, Park had thought at the time, don't wear fishing lures in your hair.
Her jewelry box must look like a junk drawer.
Not that everything she wore was stupid.
She had a pair of Vans he liked, with strawberries on them, and she had a green sharkskin blazer that Park would wear himself if he thought he could get away with it.
Did she think she was getting away with it?
Park braced himself every morning before she got on the bus, but you couldn't brace yourself enough for the sight of her.
Do you know her?
Cal asked.
No,
Park said quickly. She's on my bus. She's weird.
Jungle fever is a thing, Cal said.
For black people, if you like black people.
And it's not a compliment, I don't think.
Your people come from the jungle,
Cal said, pointing at Park.
Apocalypse Now, anyone?
You should ask him out, Park said.
That's a really good idea.
Eleanor. Eleanor wasn't going to fight over an E.E. Cummings book like it was the last Cabbage Patch Kid. She found an empty table in the African American literature section. That was another fucked up thing about this school. Effed up, she corrected herself. Most of the kids here were black, but most of the kids in her honors classes were white. They got bussed in from West Omaha, and the white kids from the flats, dishonor students, got bussed in from the other direction. Eleanor wished she had more honors classes. She wished there was Honors Gym. Like they'd ever let her into Honors Gym. Eleanor would get put in Remedial Gym first, with all the other fat girls who couldn't do sit-ups. Anyway, honor students, black, white, or Asia Minor, tended to be nicer. Maybe they were just as mean on the inside, but they were scared of getting in trouble. Or maybe they were just as mean on the inside, but they'd been trained to be polite, to give up their seats for old people and girls. Eleanor had honors English, history, and geography, but she spent the rest of her day in Crazy Town. Seriously, blackboard jungle. She should probably try harder in her smart classes so that she wouldn't get kicked out of them. She started copying a poem called Caged Bird into her notebook. Sweet, it rhymed.
Chapter 8. Park.
She was reading his comics. At first, Park thought he was imagining it. He kept getting this feeling that she was looking at him, but whenever he looked over at her, her face was down. He finally realized that she was staring at his lap. Not in a gross way. She was looking at his comics. He could see her eyes moving. Park didn't know that anyone with red hair could have brown eyes. He didn't know that anyone could have hair that red or skin that white. The new girl's eyes were darker than his mom's, really dark, almost like holes in her face. That made it sound bad, but it wasn't. It might even be the best thing about her. It kind of reminded Park of the way artists draw Jean Grey sometimes when she's using her telepathy, with her eyes all blacked out and alien. Today, the girl was wearing a giant men's shirt with seashells all over it. The collar must have been really big, like disco big, because she'd cut it and it was fraying. She had a man's necktie wrapped around her ponytail like a big polyester ribbon. She looked ridiculous. And she was looking at his comics. Park felt like he should say something to her. He always felt like he should say something to her, even if it was just hello or excuse me. But he'd gone too long without saying anything since the first time he cursed at her, and now it was all just irrevocably weird. For an hour a day, 30 minutes on the way to school, 30 minutes back. Park didn't say anything. He just held his comics open wider and turned the pages more slowly.
Eleanor. Her mom looked tired when Eleanor got home, like more tired than usual, hard and crumbling at the edges. When the little kids stormed in after school, her mom lost her temper over something stupid. Ben and Mouse fighting over a toy, and she pushed them all out the back door, Eleanor included. Eleanor was so startled to be outside that she stood on the back stoop for a second, staring down at Richie's Rottweiler. He'd named the dog Tanya after his ex-wife. She was supposed to be a real man-eater, Tanya the dog, but Eleanor had never seen her more than half awake. Eleanor tried knocking on the door. Mom, let me back in. I haven't even taken a bath yet. She usually took her bath right after school, before Richie got home. It took a lot of the stress out of not having a bathroom door, especially since somebody'd torn down the sheet. Her mom ignored her. The little kids were already out on the playground. The new house was right next door to an elementary school, the school where Ben and Mouse and Maisie went, and the playground was just beyond their backyard. Eleanor didn't know what else to do, so she walked out to where she could see Ben by the swing set and sat on one of the swings. It was finally jacket weather. Eleanor wished she had a jacket. "What are you supposed to do when it gets too cold to play outside?" she asked Ben. He was taking matchbox cars out of his pockets and lining them up in the dirt. "Last year," he said, "Dad made us go to bed at 7:30. "God, you too? Why do you guys call him that?" She tried not to sound angry. Ben shrugged. "I guess because he's married to Mom." "Yeah, but..." Eleanor ran her hands up and down the swing chains, then smelled them. "We never used to call him that. Do you feel like he's your dad?"
"I don't know," Ben said flatly. "What's that supposed to feel like?"
She didn't answer him, so he went back to setting up his cars. He needed a haircut. His strawberry blonde hair was curling almost to his collar. He was wearing an old t-shirt of Eleanor's and a pair of corduroy pants that their mom had cut off into shorts. He was almost too old for all this, for cars and parks. 11. The other boys his age played basketball all night or hung out in groups at the edge of the playground. Eleanor hoped that Ben was a late bloomer. There was no room in that house to be a teenager. "He likes it when we call him Dad," Ben said, still lining up the cars. Eleanor looked out at the playground. Mouse was playing with a bunch of kids who had a soccer ball. Maisie must have taken the baby somewhere with her friends. It used to be Eleanor who was stuck with the baby all the time. She wouldn't even mind watching him now. It would give her something to do. But Maisie didn't want Eleanor's help. "What was it like?" Ben asked. "What was what like?" "Living with those people." The sun was about an inch above the horizon, and Eleanor looked hard at it. "Okay," she said. "Terrible. Lonely. Better than here."
"Were there other kids?"
"Yeah, really little kids. 3 of them."
"Did you have your own room?"
"Sort of." Technically, she hadn't had to share the Hickman's living room with anyone else.
"Were they nice?"
he asked. "Yeah. Yeah. They were nice. Not as nice as you." The Hickmans had started out nice, but then they got tired. Eleanor was only supposed to stay with them for a few days, maybe a week, just until Richie cooled down and let her come home. "It'll be like a slumber party," Mrs. Hickman said to Eleanor the first night she made up the couch. Mrs. Hickman, Tammy, knew Eleanor's mom from high school. There was a photo over their TV of the Hickman's wedding. Eleanor's mom was the maid of honor, in a dark green dress with a white flower in her hair. At first, her mom would call Eleanor at the Hickmans almost every day after school. After a few months, the calls stopped. It turned out that Richie hadn't paid the phone bill, and it got disconnected. But Eleanor didn't know that for a while. "We should call the state," Mr. Hickman kept telling his wife. They thought Eleanor couldn't hear them, but their bedroom was right over the living room. "This can't go on, Tammy."
"Andy, it's not her fault."
"I'm not saying it's her fault. I'm just saying we didn't sign on for this."
"She's no trouble."
"She's not ours." Eleanor tried to be even less trouble. She practiced being in a room without leaving any clues that she'd been there. She never turned on the TV or asked to use the phone. She never asked for seconds at dinner. She never asked Tammy and Mr. Hickman for anything. And they'd never had a teenager, so it didn't occur to them that there might be anything she might need. She was glad that they didn't know her birthday.
"We thought you were gone," Ben said, pushing a car into the dirt. He looked like somebody who didn't want to cry.
"Oh, ye of little faith," Eleanor said, kicking her swing into action. She looked around again for Maisie and found her sitting over where the older boys were playing basketball. Eleanor recognized most of the boys from the bus. That stupid Asian kid was there, jumping higher than she would have guessed he could. He was wearing long black shorts and a t-shirt that said Madness. "I'm out of here," Eleanor told Ben, stepping off the swing and pushing down the top of his head. "But not gone or anything. Don't get your panties in a bunch." She walked back into the house and rushed through the kitchen before her mom could say anything. Richie was in the living room. Eleanor walked between him and the TV, eyes straight ahead. She wished she had a jacket.
Chapter 9. Park. He was going to tell her that she did a good job on her poem. That would be a giant understatement anyway. She was the only person in class who'd read her poem like it wasn't an assignment. She recited it like it was a living thing, like something she was letting out. You couldn't look away from her as long as she was talking, even more than Park's usual not being able to look away from her. When she was done, a lot of people clapped, and Mr. Stessman hugged her, which was totally against the code of conduct.
"Hey, nice job," in English. That's what Park was going to say. Or maybe, "I'm in your English class. That poem you read was cool." Or, "You're in Mr. Stessman's class, right?"
"Yeah, I thought so."
Park picked up his comics after Taekwondo Wednesday night, but he waited until Thursday morning to read them.
Eleanor. That stupid Asian kid totally knew she was reading his comics. He even looked up at Eleanor sometimes before he turned the page, like he was that polite. He definitely wasn't one of them, the bus demons. He didn't talk to anyone on the bus, especially not her. But he was in with them somehow, because when Eleanor was sitting next to him, they all left her alone, even Tina. It made Eleanor wish she could sit next to him all day long. This morning when she got on the bus, it kind of felt like he was waiting for her. He was holding a comic called Watchmen, and it looked so ugly that Eleanor decided not to bother eavesdropping, or eaves reading, whatever. She liked it best when he read the X-Men, even though she didn't get everything that was going on there. The X-Men were worse than General Hospital. It took Eleanor a couple weeks to figure out that Scott Summers and Cyclops were the same guy, and she still wasn't sure what was up with Phoenix. But Eleanor didn't have anything else to do, so her eyes wandered over to the ugly comic. And then she was reading. And then they were at school, which was totally weird because they weren't even halfway through with it. And which totally sucked because it meant he would read the rest of the comic during school and have something lame like ROM out on the way home. Except he didn't. When Eleanor got on the bus that afternoon, the Asian kid opened up Watchmen right where they'd left off. They were still reading it when they got to Eleanor's stop. There was so much going on, they both stared at every frame for, like, entire minutes. And when she got up to leave, he handed it to her. Eleanor was so surprised, she tried to hand it back, but he'd already turned away. She shoved the comic between her books like it was something secret, then got off the bus. She read it 3 more times that night, lying on the top bunk, petting the scrubby old cat. Then she put it in her grapefruit box overnight, so that nothing would happen to it.
Park.
What if she didn't give it back? What if he didn't get to finish the first issue of Watchmen because he'd lent it to a girl who hadn't asked for it and probably didn't even know who Alan Moore was? If she didn't give it back, they were even. That would cancel out the whole Jesus-fuck-sit-down scenario. Jesus. No, it wouldn't. What if she did give it back? What was he supposed to say then? Thanks?
Eleanor. When she got to their seat, he was looking out the window. She handed him the comic, and he took it. Chapter 10. Eleanor. The next morning, when Eleanor got on the bus, there was a stack of comics on her seat. She picked them up and sat down. He was already reading. Eleanor put the comics between her books and stared at the window. For some reason, she didn't want to read in front of him. It would be like letting him watch her eat. It would be like admitting something. But she thought about the comics all day, and as soon as she got home, she climbed onto her bed and got them out. They were all the same title, Swamp Thing. Eleanor ate dinner sitting cross-legged on her bed, extra careful not to spill anything on the books because every issue was in pristine condition. There wasn't so much as a bent corner. Stupid, perfect Asian kid. That night, after her brothers and sister fell asleep, Eleanor turned the light back on so she could read. They were the loudest sleepers ever. Ben talked in his sleep, and Maisie and the baby both snored. Mouse wet the bed, which didn't make noise but still disturbed the general peace. The light didn't seem to bother them, though. Eleanor was only distantly conscious of Richie watching TV in the next room, and she practically fell off the bed when he jerked the bedroom door open. He looked like he expected to catch some middle-of-the-night hijinks, but when he saw that it was just Eleanor and that she was just reading, He grunted and told her to turn out the light so the little kids could sleep. After he shut the door, Eleanor got up and turned off the light. She could just about get out of bed without stepping on somebody now, which was lucky for them because she was the first one up every morning. She might have gotten away with leaving the light on, but it wasn't worth the risk. She didn't want to have to look at Richie again. He looked exactly like a rat. Like the human being version of a rat. Like the villain in a Don Bluth movie. Who knew what her mom saw in him? Eleanor's dad was messed up looking, too. Every once in a while, when Richie managed to take a bath, put on decent clothes, and stay sober all on the same day, Eleanor could sort of see why her mom might have thought he was handsome. Thank the Lord that didn't happen very often. When it did, Eleanor felt like going to the bathroom and sticking a finger down her throat. Anyway, whatever, she could still read. There was enough light coming in from the window.
Park.
She read stuff as fast as he could give it to her, and when she handed it back to him the next morning, she always acted as if she were handing him something fragile, something precious. You wouldn't even know that she touched the comics except for the smell. Every book Park lent her came back smelling like perfume. Not like the perfume his mom wore, Imari, and not like the new girl, she smelled like vanilla. But she made his comics smell like roses. A whole field of them. She'd read all his Alan Moore in less than 3 weeks. Now he was giving her X-Comics 5 at a time, and he could tell that she liked them because she wrote the characters' names on her books, in between band names and song lyrics. They still didn't talk on the bus, but it had become a less confrontational silence. Almost friendly, but not quite. Park would have to talk to her today, to tell her that he didn't have anything to give her. He'd overslept, then forgotten to grab the stack of comics he set out for her the night before. He hadn't even had time to eat breakfast or brush his teeth, which made him self-conscious, knowing he was going to be sitting so close to her. But when she got on the bus and handed him yesterday's comics, all Park did was shrug. She looked away. They both looked down. She was wearing that ugly necktie again. Today it was tied around her wrist. Her arms and wrists were scattered with freckles, layers of them in different shades of gold and pink, even on the back of her hands. Little boy hands, his mom would call them, with short, short nails and ragged cuticles. She stared down at the books in her lap. Maybe she thought he was mad at her. He stared at her books, too, covered in ink and Art Nouveau doodles.
"So," he said, before he knew what to say next, "you like the Smiths?"
He was careful not to blow his morning breath on her. She looked up, surprised, maybe confused. He pointed at her book, where she'd written, "How soon is now," in tall green letters.
"I don't know," she said. "I've never heard them."
"So you just want people to think you like the Smiths?"
He couldn't help but sound disdainful.
"Yeah," she said, looking around the bus. "I'm trying to impress the locals."
He didn't know if she could help but sound like a smartass, but she sure wasn't trying. The air soured between them. Park shifted against the wall. She looked across the aisle to stare out the window. When he got to English, he tried to catch her eye, but she looked away. He felt like she was trying so hard to ignore him that she wouldn't even participate in class. Mr. Stessman kept trying to draw her out. She was his new favorite target whenever things got sleepy in class. Today, they were supposed to be discussing Romeo and Juliet, but nobody wanted to talk.
"You don't seem troubled by their deaths, Miss Douglas."
"I'm sorry," she said. She narrowed her eyes at him.
"It doesn't strike you as sad?"
Mr. Stessman asked.
"Two young lovers lay dead. Never was a story of more woe. Doesn't that get to you?"
"I guess not," she said.
"Are you so cold, so cool?"
He was standing over her desk, pretending to plead with her.
"No," she said. "I just don't think it's a tragedy."
"It's the tragedy," Mr. Stessman said.
She rolled her eyes. She was wearing two or three necklaces, old fake pearls, like Park's grandmother wore to church, and she twisted them while she talked.
But he's so obviously making fun of them, she said.
Who is?
Shakespeare.
Do tell.
She rolled her eyes again. She knew Mr. Stessman's game by now.
Romeo and Juliet are just two rich kids who've always gotten every little thing they want, and now they think they want each other.
They're in love,
Mr. Stessman said, clutching his heart.
They don't even know each other, she said.
It was love at first sight.
It was, oh my God, he's so cute at first sight. If Shakespeare wanted you to believe they were in love, he wouldn't tell you in almost the very first scene that Romeo was hung up on Rosaline.
It's Shakespeare making fun of love, she said.
Then why has it survived?
I don't know, because Shakespeare's a really good writer.
No, Mr. Stessman said. Someone else. Someone with a heart. Mr. Sheridan, what beats in your chest? Tell us. Why has Romeo and Juliet survived 400 years?
Park hated talking in class. Eleanor frowned at him, then looked away. He felt himself blush.
Because, he said quietly, looking at his desk. Because people want to remember what it's like to be young and in love?
Mr. Stessman leaned back against the blackboard and rubbed his beard.
Is that right? Park asked.
Oh, it's definitely right, Mr. Stessman said. I don't know if that's why Romeo and Juliet has become the most beloved play of all time. But yes, Mr. Sheridan, truer words never spoken.
She didn't acknowledge Park in history class, but she never did. When he got on the bus that afternoon, she was already there. She got up to let him have his place by the window, and then she surprised him by talking, quietly, almost under her breath, but talking.
It's more like a wish list, she said.
What?
They're songs I'd like to hear, or bands I'd like to hear. Stuff that looks interesting.
If you've never heard the Smiths, how do you even know about them?
I don't know, she said defensively. My friends, my old friends, magazines, I don't know, around.
Why don't you just listen to them?
She looked at him like he was officially an idiot.
It's not like they play the Smiths on Sweet 98.
And then, when Park didn't say anything, she rolled her inky brown eyes into the back of her head.
God,
she said. They didn't talk anymore all the way home. That night, while he did his homework, Park made a tape with all his favorite Smith songs, plus a few songs by Echo and the Bunnymen and Joy Division. He put the tape and 5 more X comics into his backpack before he went to bed.
Chapter 11. Eleanor. Why are you so quiet? Eleanor's mother asked. Eleanor was taking a bath, and her mom was making 15 bean soup. That leaves 3 beans for each of us, Ben had cracked to Eleanor earlier. I'm not quiet. I'm taking a bath. Usually you sing in the bathtub.
I do not, Eleanor said.
You do. You usually sing Rocky Raccoon.
God. Well, thanks for telling me. I won't anymore. God.
Eleanor got dressed quickly and tried to squeeze past her mother. Her mom grabbed her by the wrists.
I like to hear you sing, she said.
She reached for a bottle on the counter behind Eleanor and rubbed a drop of vanilla behind each of the girls' ears. Eleanor raised her shoulders like it tickled.
Why do you always do that? I smell like a strawberry shortcake doll.
I do it, her mom said, because it's cheaper than perfume, but it smells just as good. Then she rubbed some vanilla behind her own ears and laughed. Eleanor laughed with her and stood there for a few seconds, smiling. Her mom was wearing soft old jeans and a t-shirt, and her hair was pulled back in a smooth ponytail. She looked almost like she used to. There is a picture of her at one of Maisie's birthday parties, scooping ice cream cones with a ponytail just like that. Are you okay? Her mom asked. Yeah, Eleanor said. Yeah, I'm just tired. I'm going to do my homework and go to bed. Her mom seemed to know that something was off, but she didn't push. She used to make Eleanor tell her everything. What's going on up there? She'd say, knocking on the top of Eleanor's head. Are you making yourself crazy? Her mom hadn't said anything like that since Eleanor moved home. She seemed to realize that she'd lost her right to knock. Eleanor climbed up onto her bunk and pushed the cat to the end. She didn't have anything to read, nothing new anyway. Was he done bringing her comics? Why had he even started? She ran her fingers over the embarrassing song titles, This Charming Man and How Soon Is Now on her math book. She wanted to scribble them out, but he'd probably notice and lord it over her. Eleanor really was tired. That wasn't a lie. She'd been staying up reading almost every night. She fell asleep that night right after dinner. She woke up to shouting. Richie shouting. Eleanor couldn't tell what he was saying. Underneath the shouting, her mother was crying. She sounded like she'd been crying for a long time. She must be completely out of her head if she was letting them hear her cry like that. Eleanor could tell that everyone else in the room was already awake. She hung off the bunk until she could see the little kids take shape in the dark. All four of them were sitting together in a clump of blankets on the floor. Maisie was holding the baby, rocking him almost frantically. Eleanor slid off the bed soundlessly and huddled with them. Mouse immediately climbed into her lap. He was shaking and wet, and he wrapped his arms and legs around Eleanor like a monkey. Their mother shrieked two rooms away, and they all five jumped together. If this had happened 2 summers ago, Eleanor would have run and banged on the door herself. She would have yelled at Richie to stop. She would have called 911 at the very, very, very least. But now that seemed like something a child would do. Or a fool. Now all she could think about was what they were going to do if the baby actually started to cry. Thank God he didn't. Even he seemed to realize that trying to make this stop would only ever make it worse. When her alarm went off the next morning, Eleanor couldn't remember having fallen to sleep. She couldn't remember when the crying had stopped. A horrible thought came to her, and she got up, stumbling over the kids and the blankets. She opened the bedroom door and smelled bacon, which meant that her mother was alive. And that her stepdad was probably still eating breakfast. Eleanor took a deep breath. She smelled like pee. God! The cleanest clothes she had were the ones she wore yesterday, which Tina would surely point out because it was a goddamn gym day on top of everything else. She grabbed her clothes and stepped purposefully out into the living room, determined not to make eye contact with Richie if he was there. He was. Demon, that bastard. Her mother was standing at the stove, standing more still than usual. You couldn't not notice the bruise on the side of her face, or the hickey under her chin. That fuck, that fuck, that fuck. Mom, Eleanor whispered urgently, I have to clean off. Her mother's eyes slowly focused on her. What? Eleanor gestured at her clothes, which probably just looked wrinkled. I slept on the floor with Mouse. Her mother glanced nervously into the living room. Richie would punish Mouse if he knew. Okay, okay, she said, pushing Eleanor into the bathroom. Give me your clothes, I'll watch the door. And don't let him smell it. I don't need it this morning. As if Eleanor were the one who'd peed all over everything. She washed off the top half of her body, then the bottom, so that she wouldn't ever be totally naked. Then she walked back through the living room, wearing yesterday's clothes, trying really hard not to smell like pee. Her books were in her bedroom, but Eleanor didn't want to open the door and let out any more acrid air, so she just left. She got to the bus stop 15 minutes early. She still felt rumpled and panicked, and thanks to the bacon, her stomach was growling.